This is Lake Effect from Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Mitch Teich. It's great to have you listening today. It's been 8 years since Dick Abdew stepped down as the chairman of the Wisconsin Energy Corporation, but the Michigan native who started his career as an electrical engineer has not totally distanced himself from his past work. He sits on the board of directors for Menominee Falls-based ZBB Energy, which designs and manufactures energy storage and power control products. And so Abdew has much to say about the state of the utility industry today. We sat down with him in the latest in a series of conversations recorded on the sixth floor of the University Club in downtown Milwaukee. We started by flashing back to where the industry was at the beginning of his career.
When I started in the industry, it was 1963 as a summer student engineer, and the industry was in a period of expansion following World War II. They were still in this period where during World War II, the limiting factor of the military machine in the country was labor and electric energy, getting the electric energy to where it needed to be. And the federal government offered certain incentives to build transmission lines and pipe plants. And so we were still in that. There had been no environmental movement at that point in time. And as we moved forward from there, we began to get the consumer movement. We got the environmental movement. Together, they had a significant impact on the ability to expand electric system in particular. The gas system, it's out of sight, out of mind, and so nobody pays much attention to it. But the electric system, you see the poles and the wires, and there's stuff all over the place, and you got a stack, and everybody wants to know, what's that smoke coming out of the stack and smokestack? And I say, no, it's a chimney, number one. And number two, that's not smoke, it's steam. And nobody will believe you when you tell them that, but it's sort of true. But then as you went through that, there were two oil embargoes. The federal government again offered tax incentives to electric utilities to build more so that we would be more independent. Because at some point prior to the embargoes, oil was so cheap that people were converting coal to oil. Then the embargoes hit, the price of oil went through the roof, and so now the price is up. So then nuclear came in. It's just been a constant. Today, I think the state is in great shape because the new management executed the Power of the Future plan brilliantly, and we have adequate supplies. There is a lot going on in the distribution and transmission system to upgrade it. I think the state of Wisconsin and Milwaukee in particular are in exceptionally good shape.
Given the state of things as you see it today, how concerned should we be either in Wisconsin or nationally or even globally about the security of the grid?
That is always an issue. Even during my tenure, I'd get a visit once or twice a year from the FBI. It's a serious concern. I mean, to me, I don't understand why people don't have something better to do than blow up airplanes or buildings or sabotage electricity lines or gas lines or go to schools with guns. Beyond my comprehension, but there is a segment out there who, for whatever reason, have some sort of illness that compels them to want attention, and that's what they're going to do.
Before we recorded this conversation, you spoke with a group. One of the things that you mentioned was that there are four or five things that stick out in your mind that you wish you had done differently. What are some of the regrets you had from your time with Wisconsin Energy?
Probably the largest was the failed merger with Northern States Power Company. At the time, I was the youngest chief executive officer in the whole utility industry, and we had gone through somewhat unpopular revitalization task force, we called it. And the whole team were young, arrogant, bright individuals. And we had a lot of fun, but we were naive in some respects. And when I look back on that, we all looked at it technically, the benefits to the state of Wisconsin and Wisconsin Electric Power Company and its customers and shareholders from that deal were so immense that we could even commit to $500 million guaranteed reduction in electric rates across the systems. We viewed it, we said basically that the benefits of that are so great, no regulator could turn it down because their job is to balance the interest of the shareholders and customers. It's phenomenal. We did not look at it as a political ploy. And the opposition beat our pants off, and they managed to kill that deal, even though it was the best thing for the state of Wisconsin at the time. So looking back on it, I said there's a couple of things. Had I been 10 years older, I probably wouldn't have had the guts to go do it, so we wouldn't have had the problem. If I had advisors who were 10 years older, who understood the politics of the situation, we would have gone, we would have expanded the horizon. We would have gone, much the way we did with Power of the Future, we would have gone to Madison Gas and Wisconsin Power and Light, Wisconsin Public Service, and said, hey, this is a great deal for the state, and we're prepared to share some of the benefit with you. Madison Gas is a part owner of the Oak Creek units, for example, and so are the municipals. And had we done that, who knows, but there's a good chance that that deal might have actually been consummated.
You are native of the Detroit area.
Yes.
The challenges that are facing Detroit today are pretty well documented. I think they're on everyone's radar. As you look at Milwaukee, and we're sitting on the sixth floor of the University Club recording this, and we can see a nice vista of downtown Milwaukee, do you see Milwaukee on the way up or on the way down?
It's a good question. I think there are vast differences between Milwaukee and Detroit on the governmental side. And Milwaukee is solvent. We are still rated, we have a very high credit rating. That's very positive. Milwaukee has done a marvelous job of transforming its economy from a bunch of metal benders and manufacturing to more of a high-tech financial services in industry. Very positive. We have more people living downtown Milwaukee who are bright young people and retirees. I witnessed the two buildings next door, which is very positive. On the downside, we still struggle with certain segments of the city in terms of education, in terms of services, in terms of crime, in terms of opportunity, to the point where I read a statistic that said there are more people that commute around the city than to the city to go to work. And that's troubling because you need the employment in town. Milwaukee is the guts of the southeastern Wisconsin. And I tell my friends who still live in Mequon, you know, where do you go when you want to have a good meal? Well, they come downtown. They go into the Third Ward. They go down into Bayview. They come down in this neighborhood. Where do you go if you want to go to the play? Well, we come downtown. And if you want to, the symphony, well, we come downtown. And we still have all these wonderful things. I believe that on balance, I would say we're holding our own or moving up.
You mentioned the transformation of Milwaukee's economy from a place that bends metal to a place that is more high-tech and somewhat more service-based, and not everybody has come along on that ride.
And I for one, continue to believe, I admire and applaud those individuals who have made the transition into the more service, high-tech industries. But I still believe that the United States, if we are going to retain our role in the world, and if Wisconsin and Milwaukee in particular are going to regain its stature as one of the great cities in Wisconsin, we're going to have to make stuff. We cannot continue to farm out and have everything that's made be made overseas someplace. It's a very difficult situation and very complex. And let me just give you an example. When we bought Wisconsin Gas, Wycor, we ended up buying the seventh largest pump company in the world. And I remember on my tour of the manufacturing facilities, I went to a plant out in Southern California. It was in a sort of a dilapidated building. And I stopped in this one particular location where there were seven gentlemen making these parts on this big lathe. And on the lathe embossed in across it were property of the Canadian War Department, 1934. And I said to these guys, where'd you get this thing? And they said, oh, thank you, Mr. Abdu. Yeah. When you bought the company in Arkansas, the pump company, we got to pick the new equipment. And so we went to Arkansas. This was better than the lathe we had. So I'm thinking, my God, we got seven guys working on this piece of junk from 1934, turning out parts. So then I go to China, where we also manufacture parts. They got one guy with a little CAD-CAM thing. He's designing it, building it. The parts are of higher quality. There's one person. And I said to myself, shame on you. If you gave your Americans the same training and technology to manufacture the product, they'll beat the pants off that plant over in China. But we don't do it. And the reason we don't do it is because in this country, the way the accounting world rules work, capital has to be depreciated, and there is a life, and everything is based on sort of 30 years because it's old stuff. If, in fact, you change the depreciation laws and companies could invest in the training for their workforce and the new equipment, we could build anything as well, if not better, than anywhere in the world. But we don't do it. We tend to be adverse to capital formation because of technological innovation that'll render the capital obsolete. And then there's no remedy. What do you do?
In terms of the future for energy production, there's some people that point to the potential for nuclear power, a la the way France is using it, for example. I interviewed the environmental activist Bill McKibben some time ago, and he made the point that Germany, which isn't necessarily a sunny and warm place, generates a massive amount of solar power. And he asked the question of why a country with places like Arizona and Nevada and California hasn't been able to capitalize on the sun in the same way. What is the future? Why are nuclear and solar, for that matter, not a bigger part of the portfolio in this country?
Let me address nuclear first. I personally believe nuclear is the safest, cleanest, cheapest way to produce electricity, technically speaking. However, when you look at the regulatory burden and some of the mistakes that were made in the past with every plant being designed different and some of the requirements that were not imposed on the plant owners, we got ourselves in a fix where there is a certain paranoia among the public about nuclear plant. And it's interesting to me that a nuclear power plant uses uranium enriched to about 6%. It doesn't blow up. Not to say it's not dangerous if you're exposed to it, but if you brought a nuclear submarine, the Navy brought one in and parked it right over there in the port, you'd have people flocking over there to take a tour. The fuel on that reactor is enriched to 90%. It's weapons-grade fuel because it's such a small space they have to put it, they enrich it more. That doesn't seem to bother people, but if you got one, it does. So I don't have a lot of hope for nuclear renaissance. With respect to the wind and solar, and I'll admit I'm biased, an investor and a director of ZBB Energy Corp, which makes storage devices and power electronics, which solar without storage is not very good, but with storage is very cost effective. It's been one of those things where you've got the grid is controlled by utility companies who transport their own stuff across there. And for example, if you were to had a farm up north and you put a windmill up there or a solar collector and said, but my house is in Milwaukee. So I call up Wisconsin Electric and see if they'll just ship my power from my windmill down to my house in Milwaukee. They're going to tell you to get lost. I shouldn't speak for them, but my sense is that you would not get a warm reception, and in part because the Public Service Commission of Wisconsin would have to approve a tariff that would allow them to wheel, transport your power down to your house. And that is not the way the system was designed, and it's certainly not the way that there would be an argument that other customers are subsidizing you because, you know, you're using the system and not paying the full freight. California just passed such a rule. But a kilowatt hour in California is like 20 cents. So there's a lot going on. And I think if you stood back, it's the same old thing with capital equipment. If you stood back and said, we're going to start over on a piece of paper and we're going to design a system that uses more solar, more wind, that allows you to put your windmill up in Grafton and transport the power down to Milwaukee, you could do it. It would be cost effective. The system wasn't designed for that. The regulations aren't designed for that. I think we're fortunate in Wisconsin that there is a lot of wind and solar that is built and is operating. It's not cost effective unless there's some sort of storage. I mean, you can't depend on it, so it becomes sort of redundant. But I'm a big believer in renewables. I think that eventually we'll get there.
Would you like to see windmills offshore?
Oh, it doesn't bother me if there were windmills over there. Now, you know, as long as they put them out in front of somebody else's window, it's better. But no. But I mean, I look out my window and I see the Oak Creek Power Plant down there. I think those are nice sights. The point is, you don't have to put them right out on the lake shore to do it if you have a grid that's capable of transporting the power. Now, the farmers might say, well, why put it in my backyard? You don't want it in your backyard. Yeah, it's probably like a transmission tower. Some of us think of those as being, artistic structures. And others think they're ugly. And I guess it depends on who you are and if you recognize the value that the thing provides.
Dick Abdu, it has been a real pleasure. Thank you so much for your time.
Oh, thank you. It's been my pleasure indeed. And I don't know what I did to deserve this wonderful opportunity, but it's certainly been a pleasure.
Dick Abdu was the chairman and CEO of the Wisconsin Energy Corporation from 1991 to 2004. Today, he has a consulting firm and is on the board of directors of Menominee Falls-based ZBB Energy and Ohio-based AK Steel. Our conversation was recorded on the sixth floor of the University Club in downtown Milwaukee. We'll take a quick break now and then some thoughts on today's 50th anniversary of President Kennedy's assassination. This is Lake Effect from Milwaukee Public Radio.